Only at True North stores. New True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Can't get enough baseball? Start streaming MLB Network today. Get up to 15 out-of-market games a week live on any device, plus 24/7 access to MLB Network's award-winning shows, including live game look-ins and exclusive player interviews. And hear live radio play-by-play from all 30 clubs with MLB at Bat. Enjoy the home of baseball from virtually anywhere. Plans start as low as $5.99 per month. Sign up now at MLBNetwork.com/stream. Available in the U.S. only. Blackout restriction applies. Visit MLB.com/subscribe for full terms and conditions.
This is the Best of Interviews on Sports Radio 94 WIP.
All right, let's talk some Eagles football and a little bit of team dynamics with our guy Ross Tucker, the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, the Ross Tucker World Takeover with the multimedia star, both locally and nationally and perhaps even internationally. Good morning, Ross.
Good morning, Joe. How are you?
Ross, what's it like to be a multimedia star?
I wouldn't know.
Yeah, you know what? See, I'm going to tell you why I know you are. Because the Reading Phillies have you throwing out the first pitch this week, and only stars throw out the first pitch. Ross.
Well, hold on a second.
Is this true?
Didn't they just have Jack and James do it like last week?
Yeah, that really submarines Joe's point. Like, it just crushes it.
I got to be honest with you guys, I've never done it before. And I'm pretty sure there's something wrong with my rotator cuff.
Sounds
like Jack Fritz here.
He does. And both my daughters retired from softball this year, so I haven't been, like, throwing or anything. I don't even know. Like, somebody – I texted Tom McCarthy to get his advice, and he said to go up on the mound, but I don't know if you're allowed to do that. I don't know what are my tips here? I'm sure John, you, and Joe have done
this. This is really simple, and I got four words for you, and it's going to sum the whole thing up. Suck it up, buttercup.
Yeah.
That's it.
But am I allowed to go up on the mound? Because I would want to go up on the mound and do like the whole wind-up thing.
They don't let you go on the mound.
You feel the need to switch arms, man. I switched throwing arms when I was 30. I had to switch. I was taught to throw righty by my dad, who didn't seem to notice that I write with my left hand and kick with my left foot and brush my teeth with my left. Yeah, I did everything with my left hand. My dad brought home the glove that covered my left hand for baseball.
So, John,
that was troubling.
Your advice is for me, for the first time I'm ever doing this in front of 8,000 people in Reading, you want me to throw it left-handed?
You could practice.
That's your advice?
You could practice in advance. That's what
That's
I
the
did.
Worst. It's tomorrow night.
That's horrible. Oh,
that's the
tomorrow.
Worst advice I've ever heard. So you know what it is,
that's
Joe?
What we did
John's
when we
trying
went
to
down
get me
to
go viral.
Yeah.
That might go viral.
Yeah, John really did submarine you there.
So you don't feel
there.
Confident in your ability to. It's not as far. It's not far from in front of the mound. So if your shoulder is that bad, you could get it there with your left. I promise.
But I'm going to throw it even higher and harder than I think. Right, James? You guys have all done it?
So the one caveat is they usually have a kid catching it. So, you don't feel like you want to whip it at them unless you're Jack Fritz, who absolutely whipped it at the kid and terrified him.
I think the caveat is the Reading Phillies are desperate that Seltzer, Fritz, and now Ross Tucker are all throwing out first pitches.
You're not wrong, Jack.
I think some farmer out there wasn't available that day. All right, Ross, let's get to it. I want to do a ton of Eagles with you, but let's actually start. I know you were listening on the way in, the Rob Thompson, Castellano stuff. So let's just talk team dynamic, player, coach. Without having to name names, what's the craziest disrespectful thing you ever saw from a player to a coach in your years at any level of football? And half, and look, football's in the pro level is totally different because there's only 16 your time, 17 games. Players rarely get, you know, suspended or benched for a whole game. But what, in your opinion, that you saw merited, yeah, this guy should not be allowed to play the next game? And how often did the coach make that decision?
Well, it's funny because only two come to mind right away, and it's the same guy, and it's the same year, same team. Hmm. The one was in the offensive line meeting room where he just basically totally emasculated the offensive line coach.
Wow.
And it was very, very uncomfortable. The other one was during a walkthrough where he got face-to-face with the offensive coordinator and said, I've been here since before you got here. I'll be here long after you're gone. And then the OC said, the worst mistake I made was keeping you on the roster. I mean, it was intense. And actually, now that I think about it, you know, football is, maybe it's because football is a little different. They did not discipline him for the next game. He might have been like a 6- or 7-time Pro Bowler at that point. He was kind of revered in the community. I don't think the community really knew maybe what he was like inside the building. But they should have done something.
Yeah.
It was very uncomfortable, and that cannot be allowed. And I feel like in football, it's less likely. You know, baseball and the NBA, with these guys having these gigantic guaranteed contracts, maybe it's a little bit more common. But, yeah, that's the worst I've seen, and I don't remember them, to my knowledge, Joe, I don't remember them disciplining him in any way.
Yeah, no, it doesn't surprise me. And again, when it's, man, you know, if there's 162 games in that sport, maybe that player
that's
said, okay.
That's a dysfunctional organization.
Yeah, that's
there.
Rough.
That organization was bad. So that organization must have lost exclusively then.
Well, you know what? You know what's interesting about it? They moved on from him after that year. And I think he was very surprised. They moved on from him. He actually ended up going somewhere else and starting
That's
for several
awesome.
Years. But they so maybe rather than discipline him, they just thought, okay, we're done with this guy. I'll say this.
That's a huge move then. Great for them.
Yeah.
But
I've never
but
met.
It's unfortunate you have the like, let's put it this way. If Jimmy Butler wasn't such a pain in the butt, I'm sure the Sixers would have been more inclined to keep him. I mean, some players are just difficult. I mean,
listen, why do you think the Dolphins are trying to trade Jalen Ramsey?
Yes.
They just gave him a huge contract last year. They made him the highest paid corner in the NFL last year.
Yeah.
And they only did that, by the way, because Patrick Surtain got $24 million a year out in Denver. And the Dolphins knew, Jalen's going to, he's not going to be happy if he's not the highest paid guy. So he had like 2 or 3 years left on his deal. They extend him to give him $24.1 million. And he's still not happy. By the way, shout out to all the Dolphins players that were so happy the team got rid of Fangio last year.
Shout out
to all the – by the way, they've gotten rid of like all, Javon Hollins now with the Giants. All the guys that came out on social media and were like good riddance to Fangio, the Dolphins have kind of moved on from a lot of them.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Ross Tucker with us here. So, Ross, let's get to the Eagles. And I know you had your eyes on the practice last week with the OTA. Give us one or two things that stood out to you the most, and then we'll drill down on certain position groups and all. But what really struck you the most with what you saw with that practice?
Yeah, three things definitely jump out. Number one, just everybody being there and there being no drama or issues whatsoever. That is unusual, especially for a team that wins the Super Bowl, because usually after a team wins the Super Bowl, everybody thinks that like they're the reason why the team won the Super Bowl and they want this or they want that. But the Eagles do an incredible job of being so proactive with some of these guys ahead of time that to have no malcontents at all, I think every other team has at least one guy where there's an issue. So that's number one. And then actually watching things, you know, I spent a lot of time watching the O-line. And, you know, Kenyon Green, this former first-round pick that they traded for, within the Gardner Johnson trade, you know, he's working at third string left guard. And so that is a long way to go to potentially being the starting right guard instead of Tyler Steen. So I know a lot of people have talked about it. Hey, he's going to Stoutland University and maybe he's this year's Mekhi Becton. That might be the case. But, man, I feel like last year during minicamp and the lead-up to training camp, I was hearing a lot of whispers about how much they liked Becton. for Kenyon Green to still be third string and at left guard, not even at right guard, where Steen is, that would surprise me if he ends up really competing for that job. I'd be surprised. That is Steen's job to lose.
How about that?
And then the last thing, just watching the Eagles out there, you know, probably the most important thing for this team this year is that all the guys that kind of played their best in the playoffs, Hurts included, of course, but the guys that, you know, Jordan Davis had sacks in the NFC Championship game and Super Bowl.
Nolan Smith would be an
example
of that.
Nolan Smith, yeah. Jalix Hunt, Joe.
Yeah.
I'll even say Jahan Dotson was making plays at the end. Ajumma, you know, who's going to step up for Milton Williams. They really need all those guys to pick up where they left off and then some. I think we assume that they're all going to. I don't know that that's the case. Like, I think we all look at what happened in the playoffs, and certainly the Eagles picking up Jordan Davis's option, you know, for 2026, that they're hoping what he did those last two games continues. But for the Eagles, in my mind, to have any chance to win the Super Bowl again this year, all those guys that really played by far their best in the playoffs, they have to be at least that good, if not better, this year.
So Kevin Petullo has been here for 5 years. Kevin Petullo, this is now his first year as the offensive coordinator, as the guy who's calling the plays and who's standing up there in front of the offense and installing the plays for, you know, time and time again. So how much of an advantage, Ross, is it for this team, for Jalen, to have this familiarity? I know he's not the same play caller from last year, but Petullo was here and has been here with Jalen for 5 years, quite some time now. Is that going to be noticeable this year? You know, Jalen has had to sort of start from scratch every year, except for the one time he had the repeat experience of offensive coordinator 2 years in a row with Shane Steichen that culminated in the loss in the Super Bowl. It was the 2021 and 2022 season that went to the 2023 Super Bowl, I believe. So how close to that feel can we get with Petullo in this role as offensive coordinator?
Well, I mean, considering Hurts isn't one of the 11 best athletes in Philly, I think he's going to struggle. Would be my guess. I'm kidding.
You
I'm kidding.
About that.
By the way, I'm still trying to figure out how Joe, the week before, I was listening, or maybe I saw on social media, how he said that Hurts was the fifth best quarterback in the NFL, but he's not one of the top 11 guys in the city. I don't understand that, but whatever.
A lot of good players.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I got you. I got you. All right. So, no. You know, the interesting thing about Petullo, John, is we can all sit here and we can all say it's great that he's been here the whole time. And certainly he has a lot of familiarity with what Sirianni wants. He knows Stoutland well and what they want to do in the run game. He knows what Hurts does well, knows what he doesn't do well. The only issue with that discussion, and I know you guys have talked about it before, is that it seems like every time the Eagles have done this in recent memory, whether it was Mike Groh when Frank Reich left, or, you know, Brian Johnson a couple years ago when Steichen left, it doesn't seem like the familiarity has worked out all that well. And I don't know why. These are all different people. But remember, you know, Hurts had a really close relationship with Brian Johnson, who they elevated to OC. You know, ultimately, I think familiarity is good. There's no doubt about that.
But it's overrated, Ross.
No, it comes down to the guy.
Totally right.
Like we can all sit there for 3 years and play a video game together, like Madden video game, right? But some of us are going to be better than others when the controller's actually in our hand and we're the one actually doing it. So Petullo, by the way, he might be amazing. He might be an incredible play caller. I don't know, to my knowledge, that he's ever done it before. Mm-hmm. So the advantage there, and the Eagles will show nothing in the preseason, the advantage there is that he will have some new wrinkles and that the defensive coordinators around the league will not have a book on him. The disadvantage is there's going to be growing pains. You know, like anybody doing any job for the first time in their life, he's going to make mistakes. He's going to learn from those mistakes. What the Eagles need is for him to learn from those mistakes as quickly as possible. You know, Steichen had already done it a little bit before the big year. Certainly, Kellen Moore had been doing it for years. He's going to make mistakes early. I wouldn't be surprised if the Eagles were 2-2 after a month again. The goal is that Petullo learns from those mistakes quickly and does not make them again.
Yeah, Ross Tucker with us here. Ross, I want to go off the roster for a sec because there was something, a story about a month ago that cropped up, and I'm curious your perspective. So for all the talk about the tush push and many people thinking the Eagles specifically were targeted because of their success, I think a far bigger thing is if the salary cap change goes through where there's talk of the NFL trying to change the way teams like the Eagles, and there's not many of them to the Eagles' extent, spend so much extra cash and sort of what I'll refer to as salary cap loopholes. I mean, it's technically in there, but ways that the Eagles, through Howie and Lurie's money, manage the management of the cap very effectively.
Right.
Do you think the Eagles are being targeted with this potential change? That the Eagles' success and Howie's greatness at it, because you know, years ago, what was it? Was it Wilt or Kareem where they're like, you can't dunk the ball because they're so good that you can't dunk the ball. Well, do you think the Eagles are being targeted with this potential change?
It's a terrific question. For those of you that aren't familiar, the Eagles put void years on a lot of their contracts, which enables them to spend way more cash than the salary cap for that year because they spread the cash they give in bonuses over the void years. I do not think, Joe, that the Eagles are being targeted and that this is a competitive. Well, here's the dichotomy. Most of the owners don't want to do that. Most of the owners want to make more money. And so they're not happy that they're being put at a disadvantage. You know, Lurie, I've told you guys this before. I had a team, a very successful team, GM, tell me that his cash budget, meaning what his owner allows him to spend on players in a given year, is $20 million less than the Eagles.
That's a big difference.
That is a big difference. So I don't think they're upset that they feel like, hey, in order to be as competitive or as good as the Eagles or some of these other teams, we're going to make less money and or make very little money. And the organizations that are entirely reliant on the football operations for their cash flow, for their family, they want to make more money. I mean, but it's a bigger thing than that because they're already talking, Joe, that the players are getting too much. Because as these percentages keep going up and the salary cap keeps going up, that 50% that the players get is becoming a lot. So I have heard multiple teams tell me the owners are starting to feel the squeeze of not making as much money as they'd like to. Wow. They still make plenty,
sure,
but not making as much money as they'd like to. I think it's more about that than just targeting the Eagles, but it's like, hey, the Eagles have this advantage, but we don't want to do that because we want to pocket that $20 million.
It certainly would hurt them. If they harden that cap, so to speak, it certainly would help or would hurt the Eagles. There's no question.
Ross. Yeah, I got one more thing for you, Joe. Mm-hmm. Oh, go ahead, John.
I'm curious how good our edge guys are. We've got youth coming off both edges in Nolan Smith and Jalix Hunt. We're dependent on these guys to get a lot of production this year. Are they ready? How good are they? And how did they look when you've seen them in limited reps out there?
Very excited about both those guys. I was not in love with the Jalix Hunt pick. I thought a third round developmental guy out of Houston Baptist or Houston Christian. I thought third round was a little bit rich. Man, how he knew what he was doing there. Because a guy with his physical traits, if he wasn't developmental, you know, if he came out of Texas or Georgia, he would have been a first round pick or maybe a second round pick. But because he was developmental, the Eagles were able to get him in the third round. And they probably got him like a year ahead of time. I don't think they actually expected him to play at all last year. I think that they were targeting him playing this year after BG and Sweat were gone all along. I've had multiple people, BG came on my show and said Hunt's put on weight. So hopefully that, you know, they think it's good weight. I'll also say this, you know, to bring in guys like, people don't know a lot about these guys right now, but Ojulari and Uche, it's very important that you have third and fourth rushers. Uche has an 11.5 sack season. Ojulari, I believe, has 3 of his 4 years. He got at least 5.5 sacks, which is a really good number for a third guy. So the Eagles basically sold both those guys on, hey, look at the rest of our D-line. Look at Jalen Carter getting double-teamed. You just saw what Milton Williams did. You just saw what Sweat did. My guess, guys, is that there's probably a 50-50 chance on both those guys being able to really be productive and play well, which is why the Eagles went out and got two.
Yeah.
Like, if it's 50-50, let's get two of them. They only need one of them, really, to work out.
Ross, good stuff, bud. We look forward to it. I mean, the season really isn't that far away. And needless to say, we'll be cranking it up as we get closer to training camp, which I guess is now in 5 weeks, I believe. So, Ross, good stuff. We look forward to talking to you soon. Thanks, pal.
Sounds great. Thanks, guys.
All right, there he is, Ross. Talk. Remember, the Eagles start earlier. I mean, you know, Thursday night game, right? Yeah.
Wherever summer takes you, save on your journey with True North convenience stores and Red Bull. Enjoy the new Red Bull Summer Edition, White Peach, a perfect balance of bold, sweet, and refreshing. Right now, grab any 3 8-ounce Red Bull for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon, just in time for your next road trip. Save big all summer long with the True Rewards mobile app, available in your favorite app store. True North convenience stores, fast, friendly, clean.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Baseball's number one digital destination is the MLB app. And this app's got game. Like game highlights, live games, fantasy games, and more.
The gem of a game!
This is baseball your way. With stats, scores, breaking news, and daily custom content that hits every time.
A monster shot!
Because here, you choose the teams and pick the players you want to follow.
All year long.
So when they catch it on the field,
what a catch!
You catch it on the MLB app. Download today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
It is the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz. Joining us now, as he does every Wednesday at 3, Larry Anderson. L.A., this is our first call after a loss. What went wrong? How did this happen?
I answered the phone. That's what went wrong.
Yeah.
Never should have answered, not after a loss. Especially with the other crap going on.
Yeah, I know.
Stuff, I should say.
Maybe we caused it. I think maybe Jack said maybe we made the error in having you on Thursday of last week. It screwed up the mojo. I don't know what happened.
It kind of did.
Yeah.
I blame you guys for that.
So, all right, you mentioned this other crap going on. Nick Castellanos gets pulled for a defensive replacement, has something to say to Topper. Topper doesn't like it, pulls him from the lineup. What is your, I guess, just your general take on the entire thing?
Manager did what he thought was the right thing to do. That's really all there is to it. I wish somebody would come out and say what they said. Like, everybody's, you know, if we're some big boys, we should be able to say what happened. But now everybody got to be hush-hush, and so nobody knows, and so everybody can speculate and talk about it for another week. And it's like, why don't you come out and say what happened, you know? But
yeah.
I don't know. It's not my decision. So it's the manager's decision, and he it must have been something he really didn't care for. I don't know what that –
Oh, we lost L.A.?
Then he turns around and says, you know, I like his intensity or his passion or whatever the word was. It's like, well, yeah, but you still have to, you can't badmouth the man, and not badmouth the manager. I don't know what he said, but you just got to accept it. He's a manager. He makes a decision. So if he's passionate, so be it. But, you know, watch your mouth, I guess. That would be my advice, but he obviously doesn't want my advice. He's not going to listen to me or anybody else. He's on his own program.
So let me ask you this, LA. How do you think this sort of plays out. Like, stuff happens. It's a long baseball season, a lot of games, tempers flare, stuff like this. It happens, and Topper handled it. But moving forward, I'm wondering, how does Casty handle this? Castellanos handle this moving forward? You think he's able to sort of move past this and get back out there and play good baseball? Or do you think this is something that he takes offense to and it somehow has some sort of lingering effect?
That's the $64,000 question, Ike. It's like, how's this going to affect Cassie? Because he's actually playing pretty well.
Yeah.
Swinging a bat pretty good. Taking him out for defense, if we've got the worst defense outfield in baseball or close to it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that from me. I'm saying that's our metrics. Defensive metrics,
yep,
say that.
Yep.
So if the manager thinks we can put a better outfield out there, then I don't know why anybody should complain or have a problem with it. But it's, you know, if he takes offense to it and doesn't like, you know, Thompson calling him out or benching him, then I hope it doesn't reflect in the way he plays, because that's, you know, that affects the whole team.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, it's not going to help anybody.
Ellie, let me ask you this as devil's advocate, as I am want to do sometimes. It makes everybody else annoyed, but I just want to sort of like I'm just trying to think this through from all sides. So Rob Thompson, this seems out of character for him. At least publicly, and he said what happened. I think that is the other thing that I thought was surprising about all of it. If you're a player in a clubhouse and the manager like sort of acts one specific way, and there's certain things that you think that are acceptable, and then all of a sudden it gets turned around and all of a sudden it's not anymore. Like, is there a possibility that like this isn't the first time Casty has said something and he not just annoyed that he was benched, but like annoyed at the fact that he was treated differently than he's been treated before?
Yeah. I mean, has he been taken out for defense before?
I don't think so.
I don't remember. I don't recall. And that's the only thing I can think of is maybe that's, what was getting Casty kind of riled up. It's like, why are you doing this now? Like, that was good enough the other, 300 games or 250 games, but I'm not good enough this game. I don't know. That's just without, we don't know. We don't know all the details or what, you have a point there. If you say, well, he's never taken him out for defense before, why is he going to do it now all of a sudden? And, if you catch a guy in a wrong mood or whatever, wrong buttons pushed, then he says something he probably shouldn't have said. And then gets benched and he loses his streak. Not that I don't know if he cares about his games played streak or game started streak or whatever, or both. But the fact that he did have a long streak and it's something to be proud of, and all of a sudden you don't have it. There's a number of ways to look at it, but nobody knows exactly what happened. Nobody knows why, or
mm-hmm.
did anybody ask Topper why'd you go for the defense in this game and not others? Because it's not the only 3-1 win we've had.
No.
That's true. Yep.
So I don't know. I'm again, when we speculate, for me at least, I get in trouble, and so I don't want to say anything. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing that you said about speculating about what he said is I almost have no choice but to believe it was pretty bad. Because they're not telling me. I almost feel right. Like if somebody said what it was, if he cursed at Topper, something tells me he's not sitting down the next game. So I'm almost forced to imagine that it is something bad because I don't know what it is, and I would have expected I would have known. So that's what happens. You just sort of, when you don't know the answer to something, you sort of fill in the blanks, and I think that's part of what we're doing. It's hard to figure out this situation without knowing that thing.
Yeah, and that's why it's like, I don't know, I believe in transparency. I believe it's okay to call a guy out if he's not playing well. I can believe it, to do it publicly. Everything has to be in private and so hush-hush. It is what it is, and why not put it out there? I mean, it saves everybody a lot of trouble, and it puts an end to everything, I think, when you find out. But
yeah, the speculation probably is worse than... You know what I mean? Like, yeah, everybody speculating what happened. Yeah, you're right. If you just
I mean, I could hear Cassie going, "No, I was good enough for the other blankety blank blank 250 games."
Right. That feels like something he'd say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh? Yeah.
But we have not. I mean, that's again that's speculation. That's you say stuff. And there's a million things, not a million, but there's a number of things you could probably throw out there that he could have said. But if we don't know, we're never going to find out, I guess. So I don't know what we do.
Oh, we're going to find out. We got Fritz on the case.
Yeah, we got Fritz on it. Yeah. Nobody better than him. You know that right,
yeah.
L.A.
Sherlock Fritz. Yep.
Yeah.
L.A., a baseball question. How about that? Yeah. So Jesus Luzardo has those two starts where he basically melts down. There's the last start, which was excellent. And last night was sort of so-so. What did you see from Luzardo last night that caused the struggles?
Just a lack of command, really, more than anything. I just not making his pitches that you know that he was making. He made the start before. I think that's all it is. When you're walking him into guys and the pitch count gets that high, it's like, man, it's just. I think part of it is going against his former team. Although he'd faced him before, he hadn't faced him down there, and you know, like he said, he wanted to go talk to some of his friends and say hi and so on and so forth. I'm like. That wouldn't be my concern for playing against my former team. It would be, I want to go beat their brains in, but, I don't know. I think he was, maybe it was partly just that playing, you know, going home, playing at home and playing his former team. And, I don't know, maybe they saw some things or had some things on him that, I don't know. I really don't. I think more than any, just his command.
Yeah.
You know, if you make better pitches, you're going to have success.
Yeah, and you know, every time we've talked to you about a pitcher struggling, I feel like 9 times out of 10, command is the issue. You know, occasionally we're talking about velocity, but most of the time, it all stems from the ball not being exactly where they want it to be.
Right. Exactly.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I mean, that's what we got to deal with. To me, you have better command, you're going to have better success, and if you don't have command, you're not going to have as much success. That's kind of just the bottom line. But we know that.
So coming up this weekend, the Mets are in town. You know, we don't like the Mets at all, but they happen to be leading the division. They're struggling a little bit. How, I'm sure we've asked you this question before, but it feels like a big series. How big can a baseball series, one three-game baseball series be in the middle of a 162-game season?
Not that big.
All right.
Just that. But everybody wants it to be big. So it'll be big. But sorry about that.
Well, it is what it is. I wanted your honest answer.
It is. It's big in the fans' minds, but in the players' minds, it's three games. If you get swept or you sweep, it's a three-game swing. But there's so much of the season left. I mean, we went on a string where we got hot. And the Mets were cold. The Mets, you know, seems like the Phils got hot. The Mets got a little cold. And it's, you know, but with 3.5 months left in the season, there's going to be more of that. So the three games here, I mean, obviously you want to win them. I'm not trying to trivialize it, but it's, you know, whether you're playing the Mets, the Dodgers, or the Marlins, you want to win them. And that's, you know, that's the bottom line.
Oh, they're coming after you, L.A.
Yep, they got you. There it is.
Well, L.A., the correct answer is they are massive games that everyone needs to listen to on 94 WIP. Absolutely. That we cannot miss.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. All right, L.A. Well, I just want a piece of advice to you. If you get pulled in the eighth inning at some point for a defensive replacement in the booth, I want you to just watch your mouth.
Oh, I'm going to zip it.
All of a sudden, Stocker's right over his shoulder.
Yeah, staring at him. All right, L.A., thank you, man.
All right, guys, have a good one.
There he is, the great Larry Anderson.
Wherever summer takes you, save on your journey with True North convenience stores and Red Bull. Enjoy the new Red Bull Summer Edition, White Peach, a perfect balance of bold, sweet, and refreshing. Right now, grab any 3 8-ounce Red Bull for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon, just in time for your next road trip. Save big all summer long with the True Rewards mobile app, available in your favorite app store. True North convenience stores, fast, friendly, clean.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Baseball's all about the games, and the best in daily gaming is on the MLB app, where every day starts with new puzzles and challenges. Test your skills with MLB Pickle, the ultimate mystery player challenge, and Immaculate Grid, where stats and strategy collide. Or chase the $5.6 million jackpot and beat the streak, presented by BetMGM. And for an all-new spin on fantasy sports, there's Spinball. The game's official home for games is on the MLB app. MLB trademarks used with permission. No purchase necessary. Restrictions apply. For official rules, go to MLB.com/play/official rules.
It's the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz. Spike and Fritz with you. Ike off today. Had some news with the Sixers today, as Ace Bailey was supposed to be here today to meet with Sixers brass and then work out tomorrow. It was canceled by the Ace Bailey camp, and with us to talk about it is the People's Insider, Jake Fisher, born and bred Philadelphia. Jake, how we doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, man. How are you? It's an honor to be here, as always.
Oh, listen to him. Listen to him, Jack.
Buttering us up.
You can subscribe.
No, man. Yeah. Just listening to the intro track, coming back from commercial, takes me back to being in the car as a kid. It always does.
There you go.
We'll grill you on Mosh later, but yeah. We got important things to get to.
Yeah, we have some Mosh questions later. You can subscribe to Jake's writing. Jake works with Mark Stein, legend, there at markstein.substack.com. Definitely, if you are into rumors, if you like the NBA and you're into rumors, that is a good place to be. So, big story today is that there had been some whispers about Ace Bailey only working out for certain teams, blah, 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 blah. And then the Sixers schedule the meeting for him to come in today and the workout tomorrow canceled. So, like, as best as you can tell, why did he make the meeting and then cancel the meeting?
To be honest, there does not seem to be a sensible reason as to why this has all unfolded, because the only savvy chicanery agenting that would be behind this that would make sense is if you have a promise somewhere else in the top five, top six, wherever your range that you're comfortable with, and you have that secured and you just want to make sure you try to clear the way and do what you can to get to that spot. But we have not heard he's worked out anywhere else. And from all my conversations around the league, I don't think he's locked in at Charlotte. I don't think he's locked in at number five with Utah. And there's some serious questions about even if the Washington Wizards would be a home for him, or even the New Orleans Pelicans down at seven. So I could be completely in the dark, but there is no word right now that Ace Bailey actually has a spot. And I don't really understand what the strategy here is. I really don't.
Yeah, there was some talk that he wanted to go somewhere where he could sort of thrive. Like, I guess the idea being that he wouldn't want to go to a contender. He would want to go to a team where he would be able to be featured more. It just doesn't seem like it makes any sense to not work out at all. It's not like he is everybody knew Cooper Flagg is a locked-in player, right, at number one.
Sure.
You don't go and work out for teams unless you know, when Markelle Fultz came and worked out for the Sixers, unfortunately, he knew they were going to take him at one. So if you are a guy trying to increase your stock, it would seem that any meeting you could have and any positive workout you could have would only make your stock go up, right?
I would agree. And I think there's always been some type of, what agents can try to maneuver things and figure out exactly how to get your star to a spot. But when you look at Ace Bailey in particular, the shot selection is a bit questionable to teams. He doesn't have as much on-ball creation stuff that you would want in a, surefire top, franchise-changing guy. So when you put it at Philly, obviously that situation isn't there. He's going to be behind Joel Embiid, Paul George, Tyrese Maxey at a minimum. Charlotte, that team is pretty much run through LaMelo Ball and Brandon Miller right now. Utah has the vacuum and has the opportunity for any prospect to come in there. They have not hit on a guy in the last however long this rebuild you want to call it with Utah is. Same thing with Washington. In theory, there's no clear-cut number one option there, but it doesn't seem like teams are even looking at him to be that type of player anyway. I haven't heard scouts talk about him nearly in the breadth of Cooper, of Dylan, or even just a general someone who you're going to bring in and think that this guy is going to be potentially one day the best player on a championship team.
Jake Fisher with us. Jake Fisher, the People's Insider. You can find more of Jake's writing at Mark Stein's website. Just Google Mark Stein. It's right there. So let me ask you two Sixers-related questions based on the decision that Ace Bailey made. If you're the Sixers, does this, if you were going to take him, does this, like, do you think this affects whether they would take him or not?
No. At the end of the day, I think Daryl Morey is the type of I will go against the grain thinker type guy to just pick the prospect that he wants no matter what. That being said, I think with Philly, this is such a weird spot being that you very rarely see teams trade out of a top three pick. And you also very rarely see a top three pick immediately contribute to a championship caliber rotation and roster. And that is, of course, what the Sixers hope this group will be when everyone is theoretically back healthy next season. Those are big ifs and big theories. But if that is the outcome, that's what obviously is the North Light and the guiding star of what Daryl and that group is trying to achieve throughout all their offseason roster work and whatnot. I don't think you take the project guy. I do think you want someone who has more of a clear cut. We see him translating and contributing in some degree right now. Like, you're kind of trying to have to split the baby in thinking about this group long term, knowing the concerns that Joel might not be healthy, and then you have a bigger question on your hands. But in the event that you are a top of the Eastern Conference team, you do want someone who can help you right now. And I don't know if that's Ace Bailey.
Jake, how real is the Paul George rumors out there? Like, do you think on opening night he's going to be a Sixer?
I do. I've never gotten any credible word that Philly's actually talking about him in trade rumors. We've written that the last little stretch here on the Stein line. And I think also, I don't know how Daryl can come around with giving, you know, Mike Levin a cap space jersey on the rights to Ricky Sanchez. And
he did,
you know, then come back to ownership the next year and say, you know what, my bad, that wasn't the right call. I should also still be the person, you know, leading this organization. I don't think you can just about face on your absolute, like, this is the most direct path to a championship decision in, you know, 11 months. I don't really see that as something that, like, that's not Orlando moving off of KCP, for example, very quickly, putting all their chips in and go get Desmond Bane. That is the top free agent on the board that you cleared all this cap space for, that you potentially, it didn't have any near outcome, but you, like, potentially, you know, tricked up Tyrese Maxey's extension to delay the space, all this for Paul George and only Paul George. I don't think you can just snap your fingers and about face so quickly like that.
Well, certainly, unless they are getting a better player than Paul George. I think the question, for sure, the thing that people are asking about is, would they do it just to rid themselves of the contract? And that seems incredibly unlikely to me at this point.
Agreed.
Yeah.
I mean, sure. Could they, in theory, call up Utah and try to see if a Paul George for Larry Markkanen thing exists? I saw that got reported somewhere. Sure. I just don't see why Utah would do that. I don't see why. Like, I don't think there's options out there. Like, you know, same thing. We talked about the Memphis deal. You know, people started texting me right after that trade, like, oh, well, who's Memphis going to go out and trade all that stuff for? Like, probably someone like Desmond Bane. Like, there aren't that many players, I think, on the board that you could turn Paul George into that make you so much better. I'm sure someone listening in the car is screaming, Kevin Durant, Kevin Durant, Kevin Durant. Do you really want to go after KD after all the stuff that's been plaguing this team? Like, you want to get an older guy who has more injury stuff and isn't secured long term?
And yeah, and by the way, who wants two more years at $60 million after he gets traded too? So... So, couple other things. There's been a lot of, and we've talked a lot about the idea of the Sixers trading back. It, like, that feels it felt like what they were going to do, but if there's not a team that's desperate for Ace Bailey, I wonder if that's going to happen. What do you think the odds of the Sixers trading back at this point are?
So I think, like you said, it wouldn't necessarily be for Ace. I think if there's a team that just at the end of the day, they wake up next Wednesday morning and they think to themselves, we need VJ Edgecombe, that's probably the best chance, I think. And the one team I've heard all along to really monitor for that has been Washington picking number six. I don't know how aggressive the Wizards will ultimately get to do that, but that was kind of the one scenario that I've heard all along that I believe to be true, that I've kept in my back pocket thinking, you know, let's be prepared for this. But outside of that, at this point in time, I am starting to think it's far more likely that Philly stays pat. And I know from talking to a couple people amongst those teams right after Philly, they're starting to operate and conduct their business as if the Sixers will stay at three and most likely take Edgecombe as well. So that's where I'm at right now. But I do think with Philly, with Charlotte, even down to Toronto and Houston and others in the lottery, I think a lot of this trade stuff is going to potentially really come down to the wire when they're on the clock and how the order really starts to shake out.
Jake, I find the insider game so fascinating. Like, I think it's so like cool, actually. Like, how hard is this time of the year trying to decipher what's real, what's not? Are you being used? Like, take us inside this last week up until the trade, or up until the NBA draft.
Yeah, to be honest, and this is probably a bad thing to say to like shoot out the majesty of what we do. The draft is honestly the easiest time of year because there's so many people involved. There are, you know, college coaches and college graduate assistants and the trainer from the agency and the intern at the agency and the actual agent, and certain people played for Team USA, so there's contacts there, and they played in an AAU program and that coach is involved. And then every single team, you know, everyone picking behind Philly, for example, knows that I could potentially be on WIP talking about the Sixers, and they're like, what's Philly up to? And then you talk to those teams, and then you talk to teams below them and the teams below them. Everyone's trying to hack this order this year, 1 through 59. It's not like the trade deadline or free agency where, you know, for example, the mid-level market right now is kind of all the rage, right? And we're trying to pinpoint, you know, which centers are going to go to these spots. Like, you know, one team just might decide, oh, this trade came about and we're actually not in the mid-level market anymore, and the thing you were chasing just disappears. With the draft, there is going to be a 1 through 59, and everyone who is remotely tied to the NBA is trying to figure it out. So you kind of can help everyone that you are friendly with, have rapport with, help them do their jobs and vice versa. And it is almost like you're putting together a puzzle and someone like brings you a corner piece from somewhere else. And then that helps start to piece together these other things. So the draft, I think, is maybe the easiest time to triangulate all this stuff. But to your question, there is, because all those people are involved, there is more information than there is at any other time. So it does take some BS meter stuff to be able to, you know, suss out what's real. But I do think I have enough people that I trust that are actually like in the room where it's happening to be able to suss out some of the things that I don't necessarily buy.
Last thing, Jake, we did hear some rumors about the Sixers potentially trading up to two. Anything on that, or is that dead? That always felt like a long shot to me.
It always felt like a long shot to me too. I'm sure they tried in earnest, but in the very beginning, once the lottery broke, I think there was some, you know, real initial skepticism that Dylan Harper would fit next to Castle and De'Aaron Fox. But after that initial kind of shock, there's been nothing but direct word, I'd say, that Dylan Harper expects to go to San Antonio number two, and San Antonio expects to draft Dylan Harper.
All right. There he is, Jake Fisher, the People's Insider. You can go subscribe to his stuff with Mark Stein. Can they go to steinline.com? Does that work too? Or is it
markstein.substack.com? I don't know anything else. Yeah.
There it is. Sorry. Markstein.substack.com. Thank you again, Jake.
Thank you, guys.
Well, seems like
it's a real insider.
VJ Edgecombe. As opposed to what? Me?
Elliot.
Oh, yes.
And by the way,
yeah,
you said they're going to stay at three. You told me for months. You shouted from the rooftops. No way, Daryl's just going
to
stay there at three.
He wants
to trade back and take a player.
Well, look, Jake could have been spinning us.
Could have been.
He could have been spinning us.
Could have.
You know.
Edgecombe, I think, man, I like him a lot. Like, you see the talent.
He's
I just
a good player.
Worry about the bag.
Well, whatever. I mean, that's the
He could be Oladipo.
He could be Oladipo. He could also be, look, all I know is my nightmare is Josh Hart. Josh Hart was my nightmare in that Knicks series. And not that you want to take the number three pick in the draft and make him Josh Hart, but if the floor is Josh Hart, if the floor is a guy who is going to grind and, like, at 6'4", is going to defend his ass off, is going to get rebounds. By the way, he's not, like, a great create for himself shooter, but he's a great spot up shooter.
Sure.
So I would, their worst state that they could do with VJ Edgecombe. And the other thing I'll say, by the way, is like the Ace Bailey thing is over. Like I would just, if you went, because there was a group of people led by, or at least that included Elliot, that were that he is some sort of like superstar in the making, and he is Kevin Durant, and he is Jason Tatum, like. He is the wrong guy for every reason. The most important reason that he is the wrong guy is because he's not that good. Like, he is not going to, I don't think the odds that he is going to be a star player are very good. And if he is going to be a star player, that, and this is from every person you talk to, this isn't just like some bias I have, is that if Ace Bailey is going to be a star player, Ace Bailey is going to be a star player in like 5 years. Well, first of all, we don't have 5 years. The second of all, the only way he becomes a star player in 5 years is if he gets a ton of playing time to become that player. He's just not going to get it here. He's not going to be the first option. And it doesn't seem like he is a good spot-up shooter. It doesn't seem like he has any desire, based on any rumor that has come out, that he wants to come in and play 12 minutes and shoot the ball when it's passed to him and play defense.
He is a 43%, you know, catch and shoot shooter from three.
Great, but he doesn't want to be a catch and shoot shooter. He has no desire to do that.
Well,
and,
but hold on.
The last thing. Like, just watch him play.
Yeah.
If you watch him play, and watch him play in college compared to every player that you are comparing him to, he doesn't look the same. He doesn't. Every shot he takes is hard because he can't get by his guy. He can't dribble. He doesn't have a great first step. He's just not the guy. The Ace Bailey dream is over. It's gone. Forget about it. They're not going to take Ace Bailey. He's not going to be a star here. He's not the future. It is over. No more Ace Bailey.
Yes, it is that time of the week, and it is a big weekend to come with the Mets in town. It's time for a Fransky Friday. Scott Fransky joining us, sponsored by Morgan and Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. Scott, how you doing today?
Scott.
Well, I'm doing all right. No power, no phone, no internet.
Oh.
Yeah. Sitting in a parking lot right now just so I can call you guys.
Well, we appreciate it, Scott. Scott, you know, I'm kind of curious because we kind of bantered this around all week long. So allow me to long talk for just a minute. What do you make of the Castellanos benching, the whole thing with that, and then him starting the next night?
Well, I don't know what was said.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't, you know, I mean, I just know if Rob felt it was to the level, if it rose to that level, I don't think he would do it. From what I can gather is he really contemplated it, you know, thoughtfully.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's not like he came off the field and that night he said, all right, well, you're going to be benched tomorrow. I mean, they talked about it that night and they, you know, he went back and he thought about it and, he, you know, obviously thought it rose to that level. So, I think Rob has done a pretty good job of managing some, you know, some pretty big personalities in that clubhouse over the years. And,
mm-hmm.
and so I'd like to think he knows what he's doing there.
So, Scott, now a couple interesting things from this, because it all turned out okay, right? Next night he makes the catch, they win the game, and it's kind of, you know, everyone's talking about water under the bridge. I'm curious where this goes from here. So, we know he left him in the field late in the game since then, but now, you know, the seal is broken. You know, they will take him off the field. At least that's a thought. They could take him off the field late in the game. When do you, and I think I heard you ask the other day, is there a, let's call it a formula, right? Is there a moment where you know it's the right thing? Is it a one-run lead, two? And I don't think that Topper is going to unveil what it is, but how do you think this goes now? Because clearly they have a better all-defense outfield that doesn't include Nick, and they kind of told us that the other night, yet he was still on the field after that. I'm just wondering how this goes as the games get bigger and the stakes get higher here.
I think we're going to see it more often. I really do. I don't think it will be an every game thing. And like, you know, like you mentioned, there's not an exact science to it or a specific formula, but some of it, you know, it's where did he bat in the eighth inning? Did the Phillies just clear his spot in the order, for instance? Is he going to bat again? Is it a one run game and you're worried about, going extras? Is your bullpen short, right? Are you trying to win it right then? Can you play the long game if your bullpen's a little short or whatever? I do think we're going to see it. I think we'll see more of it because I know it's something that, you know, he's talked about and contemplated for a while. I think everybody understands that, there's an upgrade defensively in the outfield, and that's to put Rojas out there, move Marsh to left, which is an upgrade in terms of using Marsh. Kepler, would be an upgrade over Castellanos in right. I think this comes down to Nick. I mean, Nick loves to play. Nick wants to be out there for every single inning, but, he also has to understand what's best for the team, and there will be nights when it's best for the team for him to, you know, spend the last half inning or inning and a half on the bench and to have a better defensive outfield.
Scott Fransky with us. Scott, I'm going to ask you kind of a big picture question. Your year's covering baseball. Obviously, Castellanos is the subject this week. I saw a story that Nick had asked the Phillies now, after all this, to show him some of the defensive metrics, to let him see the data that they see. Scott, do you think players, because I have a theory that players that maybe are losing range don't know it like we know it, or maybe they don't want to believe it. I think it's one thing if they're making errors, that's obvious, like they know I made a mistake. I'm just curious, and I wonder if Nick Castellanos before this week knew, like does he know that all the numbers are saying he's losing steps out there and maybe they got to do this? Do you think players know when they're losing range, or do you think that's something they have to be explicitly told, like this isn't going the way we need it to go?
I think most of them probably get it as they get older. I can't speak to Casty specifically on that. But I think most players, whether they want to publicly acknowledge it or not, is a different story. But I think privately, I mean, they know when their swing is getting slower. They feel it. Right? They get beat by pitches that they didn't used to get beat by. And the same applies defensively, or the same applies for a pitcher, you know, who doesn't have the same velo or doesn't have the same break or doesn't have the same command or whatever. They understand it. Now, whether they want to publicly, you know, acknowledge it or not is another story. And I don't think they necessarily have to. But it's good to have some awareness, you know, as Charlie Manuel used to say, know thyself.
Yeah, that helps.
I think it's fine that Nick wants to learn more about it. That's great. Rob kind of joked about it yesterday. He said, look, I should probably get those packets too and learn more about it because I don't use them. He doesn't use really. He knows generally what they are and what they say, but he watches the game and he uses his eyes to tell him who's got more range than the other guy. And I think if you're watching every game, every night, every play, like he is, you have a pretty good sense on when a guy's losing a step.
I would think so, too. All right, Scott. Well, Castellanos should be out there tonight, as all the Phillies are, with Zach Wheeler. And it's a big series. Scott, how do you frame how big you think this series is? I mean, we all realize it's still June. I mean, whatever happens this weekend, there's a lot of baseball to go, and they'll play each other again. It does feel to me like a bigger one than normal, though, Scott, because the Mets seem to have had the Phillies number
for about a year now. It feels like they just keep getting the best of the Phillies, and I want to see that turn around. Like, that's just from my fan perspective. Scott, how big do you think this weekend is, all things considered?
I think it's a bigger than normal series. I mean, I don't think there's any question about it. I mean, anytime you play within your division, and certainly anytime you play the team that's co-leading the division with you, it's a big series. From a mental standpoint, I don't think it hurts at all to say, you know, I think it would do maybe, I'm trying to see how to phrase this. It would maybe do more harm than good, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So if they get beat up again, right, then like what happened in April, then they think to them, you know, then all the old ghosts come in. If they win two out of three, or if they play really well and, you know, battle and fight and you know, win the series, it's good, but I don't know that it carries them. You know what I mean? I think it's more a downside than anything else. If you don't play well, then again, all those old thoughts start to creep into the back of your head. Just like we were talking about a minute ago. Did I lose range? Have I lost bat speed? Did I lose a step? Have we lost a step as a team, you know, with our chief rivals in the division? So, I think it's important that they play well and they show well I think they have the pitching matchups they like. I don't think there's any doubt about that. They have Wheeler going in game one. I think that's great. And should be fun. Should be an unbelievable weekend, I hope.
So, Scott, is there any chance that we might see Bryce Harper this weekend?
I don't think so. You never know. It does sound like it's going to be sort of a show and go, if you will. Like, mm-hmm. Bryce tries it out. Dry swings yesterday. He swings off the tee. If that goes well, maybe he swings, you know, get some live pitching to see. But I think it's probably unlikely that it's this weekend. But, you know, he's the showman. And I know the narrative can be out there that, you know, with three games coming up on national TV, maybe he wants to jump back onto the stage. But I would think Houston's a more likely possibility.
Yeah, nothing would surprise me, but I tend to understand what you're saying there. All right, last one for you, Scott. Is Orion Kirkering the closer now? I mean, it never seems like we have a closer, and it always kind of goes back and forth in matchups, but I did think this was interesting this week. He closed some games, and then they went back to him last night. Do you think he's the ninth inning guy, or is it still just a mix and it's just his week?
Yeah, no, I think he's just number one on the trust tree, if you will. Because, you know, last night he was warming up in the eighth, and he's still the favored reliever if there's a situation to put out a fire. And that might be in the seventh. It might be in the eighth. He might close in the ninth. But I do think that moment that he sees as biggest in the game, that's where Kirkering will be used. And last night there was a chance it might come up, you know, one run game, somebody gets on, situation develops in the eighth. They were getting him ready for that. And if that was the case, he's not coming back out for the ninth, I don't think. So, like in that case, he wouldn't have been the closer. But, you know, to close that inning, he's their most trusted guy. And if there's a spot in the seventh, eighth, or ninth, certainly in the eighth or ninth, he's the guy.
Well, he's done a good job this week with a couple of saves. Scott, we appreciate you hopping on. Good luck with the power. I'm in the same boat at
home. Appreciate you.
So hopefully that gets back on soon. Yeah.
Same to everybody. I know there's a lot of people without it.
There really is. Scott, thank you, Scott. We'll be listening this weekend.
All right.
There he goes. Scott Fransky there. How about Scott Fransky going into a parking lot to get on the phone with us?
I appreciate that. That's dedication.
It is dedication to the show. I mean, he had to get your answers for you about Castellanos.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
They're already stars, but now you can make them all stars. Vote in the 2025 Pro Spirit MLB All-Star Ballot 5 times daily. Show your favorite players just how much you want to see them play in Atlanta. And new this year, download and visit the MLB Pro Spirit game during Phase 1, and you can secure an additional vote per day for your favorite players. Submit your ballot today at MLB.com/vote and add some shine to summer. Voting ends June 26th at 12 p.m. Eastern Time. MLB trademarks used with permission.